Barbara Meehan was never the funny one. She didn't really make jokes or strive to keep things light and positive. But today, at 64 years old, if the spotlight shined upon her, Meehan suspects she could do observational comedy at an Alzheimer's conference.
Obviously, only other caregivers could appreciate it, because I'm sure there are people who would think you were being mean. But you're not, because if you don't laugh, you'll cry every day. But it's not, you know, it's not funny. It's sad.
Meehan is one of about 15 million unpaid Alzheimer's caregivers in the nation. It's estimated there's about 320,000 in the Commonwealth, and probably more than 21,000 on Cape Cod alone. They're often lonely, emotionally worn, and physically exhausted because caregivers live in a world where the air is thick with loss. They witness the loss of memory and personality, and there's also the looming loss that's sure to come.
Every one of us would keep our loved one home as to the absolute last possible moment, if we had the help.
Sometimes, though, when she's tired, when the same question has been answered numerous times and all her forced hope of things getting better seems to have slipped away, Meehan gets struck by a thought that sickens her.
I'm going to be real honest. There are times when you sort of think, oh, I wish we were already at the in a nursing home point. And you want to talk about feeling guilty. That's when you really feel guilty. But it's times when you're just so exhausted and so lonely. That's the thing, is you're really lonely.
Meehan and 71-year-old Faye Miles have been partners for 31 years. They met at Old Rochester Regional High School in Mattapoisett when Meehan was a guidance counselor and Miles taught phys ed. They're retired now, living in a modest home in Wareham, not too far from the water. But retirement life is not filled with day trips and music concerts like they expected. On April 24th, 2008, Miles was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
I do all the cooking. I do all the cleaning. I do the laundry. I do the shopping. I help Faye get dressed in the morning and ready for bed at night. The only time I leave her is if I get up and go do the laundry at 8 o'clock in the morning, because she doesn't get up early, which has been a blessing.
Meehan is almost always nearby because Miles cannot be left alone anymore. They can afford to spend $600 a month on a home health aid, which buys Meehan 6 hours of respite a week. So for 3 hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays, she can leave the house as the young aide tackles chores Meehan can't do anymore.
We had an episode where, you know, she decided to take a bath and then couldn't get out of the tub. And we could have won $10,000 on America's Funniest Home Videos, frankly, because I'm in the tub in my clothes trying to get her up. And we both were just hysterical laughing. But she couldn't figure out what to do.
As Meehan talks at the kitchen table, Miles is in the front room near the picture window. She spends most of her days here in her favorite chair, reading books. It takes about 3 weeks to finish one.
I like to play tennis. I like to play basketball. I like to read.
And Barbara is a nice woman.
Yes, she is.
And she helps take care of you?
Yes. You help take care of me, right?
Huh?
You help take care of me.
I do.
You're a good woman.
Thank you.
Financially, the couple lives pension check to pension check. Miles has no long-term care insurance, and she does not qualify for government assistance in the form of Medicaid, and probably won't until her assets are nearly depleted. But more upsetting to Meehan than the troubling finances is the lack of support.
The people who I thought might be there for us aren't. People we have done a lot for. Faye has got the best heart, always had the best heart.
Caregivers often put their entire lives aside, sometimes finding it more economical to retire from their jobs than to pay home health aides. The burden grows heavier, Meehan says, when friends fade away because they can't face the disease.
It amazes me that you can't pick up a phone and say, is there anything I can do? And if you're not comfortable being here, cook us a meal. God, cook us a meal, please.
While Meehan would welcome any assistance, many caregivers hide their loved ones away, perhaps ashamed of what the disease has done. Liz Smith is the director of the Council on Aging in Orleans, a town where 50% of the residents are age 60 and over. Orleans has some of the most robust services in the state for people with memory impairment, but only a small percentage of the estimated 400 people with Alzheimer's there take advantage of the programming.
I worry, where are these people? Sometimes when I'm in the food store and I see the couple
elderly, holding hands tightly. I don't really think it's because they're so crazily in love with each other still. I think it's because one is worried about the other leaving and not knowing where they are.
The numbers of Alzheimer's patients is increasing as the baby boomers generation continues to hit age 65. On Cape Cod, which has one of the oldest populations in the country, there's a desperate need for coordinated care among patients and comprehensive support for the people on the front line of the Alzheimer's front, the caregivers. For WCAI, I'm Sean Corcoran in Wareham. Alzheimer's disease is fatal. It steals memories and personalities at its own pace, though most people die within 8 years of diagnosis. The older we live, the greater chance we have of getting the disease. It's estimated that about one in every eight people age 65 and above has Alzheimer's. But it's not just a part of getting older. Sometimes, Alzheimer's clogs the brain of younger people, people like Butch Noonan.
I'd like to be recorded for, so people will know that I'm of sound mind about my end-of-life issues because I have early-onset Alzheimer's disease. And I'm 51 years old now.
Butch made this video so his family would know what he wanted and what he didn't want when Alzheimer's left him unable to make those decisions himself.
I don't want to have to be force-fed or tube-fed. If I can't eat, I don't want anybody to feed me. Because all it is doing is extending the pain longer.
If there's one thing that Butch and his six surviving brothers and sisters learned from their experience with Alzheimer's, it's that the best way to face it is with planning and discussion. Family meetings to sort out financials and end-of-life choices often are fruitless once the disease has settled in.
My mom was spoon-fed for 5 years in a bed.
That's Patty Barbado, Butch's older sister.
My mom wouldn't have wanted to be spoon-fed. That wouldn't have been her choice, but Butch made sure that nobody was going to spoon-feed him because he didn't want to be kept alive. When his life was done, he wanted it to be done.
There were 10 brothers and sisters in the Noonan family, spread out over 22 years. They lost their mother, Julia, to what's called early-onset Alzheimer's when she was in her late 30s. Julie Noonan Lawson, the third youngest, was still in kindergarten at the time.
We actually thought that with the death of my mother, we were burying the disease. We thought that was it. We were very happy to have that end of our life over with.
But Alzheimer's returned, and it took their mom's twin sister. After scientists discovered the gene mutation that leads to early-onset Alzheimer's, the Noonans were told they each had a 50% chance of inheriting the dominant gene. Sister Maureen died first, the same day Sister Kathy died of cancer. It's not known if Kathy had the Alzheimer's gene or not, but Maureen did, and Sister Fran was next. When her symptoms began to appear, Julie says Fran was determined to control the disease as much as she could. She was not ashamed.
She ended up going around. She went to her bank. She went to the school. She went to the orthodontist. She went to the pediatrician. She went everywhere she could that she knew that she might need extra support and asked those people to go an extra step for her to help her to support her children.
Most of the Noonan siblings have been tested for the early onset Alzheimer's gene. Julie, John, and Patty, who were interviewed for this story, do not have it, so they cannot pass it along to their children and grandchildren. But the next generation, the children of Fran, Butch, Maureen, and perhaps even Kathy, still are at risk.
My other nieces and nephews, who may have to face it, that now don't have their mom and their dad, and they may have to face it. It's just, you can't leave the rest behind.
10 years ago, the Noonan siblings sat down for a family meeting to discuss what they wanted to happen at the end of their lives and who they wanted to make decisions for them. There's tremendous value in learning how they made their decisions and the discussion that went on. For example, while surrounded by his siblings and their spouses, John Noonan said he didn't want his wife Donna to be his healthcare proxy. She started to cry.
And it felt like crap, but my wife loves me. She's not going to want to let me go. She's going to want to spoon-feed me. She's going to want to keep me alive.
Not long after the family meeting, Butch made his 36-minute video. John was his healthcare proxy, and he considers it a final gift from his brother.
I had probably viewed that video a dozen times in the last 2 years of Butch's life because I wanted to make sure that I was doing exactly what Butch wanted. Not just what I remembered hearing, but I watched a video that he made 10 years earlier saying what he wanted.
Patty says the video also made clear Butch's wishes to people outside the family. He did not want a ventilator. He did not want to be resuscitated if his heart stopped or put on dialysis if his kidneys failed. And if the disease caused him to lash out, he wanted to be medicated to keep people safe.
The nursing home employees got to see that video. So it wasn't just a directive from somebody said that this is what Butch wants. They could view that video and see that he was very serious about what he didn't want.
Butch Noonan died on November 4th of last year, just shy of his 59th birthday. Death is at your doorstep. In addition to his recorded interview detailing his final wishes, there's another video the family has. It's also of Butch, and it's a collection of pictures set to this music from the last 10 days of his life. You never see Butch's face in the video or get a good look at how Alzheimer's ravaged his body. Instead, the photos are of people's hands. His brothers and sisters, his wife and two children's, their hands, holding each other and trying to offer comfort. For WCAI, I'm Sean Corcoran in Sandwich. Hold your hand. Ruth Motorstock is 90 years old, and she knows there's something wrong with her memory. She looks at the pictures on the wall of her studio-style apartment, and they seem to confuse her.
I don't have too much remembrance, because I had a... What was it I had?
Well, you've forgotten some things.
I'd forgotten a lot of things.
You've forgotten some things as you've gotten older the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's why it's really helpful for me to bring the pictures.
Yeah, he has all those pictures.
Bob Motorstock visits his mother twice a week at the assisted living facility Harbor Point at Centerville on Cape Cod, and he often brings his iPad. It's loaded with pictures of graduations and birthday parties that date back to when Ruth was just a girl. Bob says the photos help her remember.
That's when you took me to college, when I first got to college.
Where did you go to college? I don't even remember.
Princeton.
How could I forget that? Huh?
Yeah.
When Harbor Point opened 11 years ago, it was the first assisted living facility on Cape Cod specifically for people with Alzheimer's and memory impairment. It used to be that the only option outside the home for people with Alzheimer's was a nursing home. But over the past decade, the elder industry has reacted to the growing number of Alzheimer's patients, creating assisted living facilities where almost all patients can spend the duration of their lives.
You know, people don't come here to get better, but they come here to live well within the disease process.
That's Sandra West, Harbor Point's executive director.
The perception for this generation has often been, you know, don't move me to a nursing home. Well, we're not a nursing home, and it takes a visit to come in, to look around, to get the feel of the community.
West says Harbor Point feels more like a bed and breakfast than a long-term care facility, and she's right. It has thick carpets and art-covered walls. Residents attend yoga classes and tea parties. Workers can assist with everything from bathing to eating, but unlike nursing homes, skilled nursing care is not provided. And the difference from a traditional assisted living facility is that everything is geared towards making things easier for the memory impaired.
We use red dining plates to help with the amount of food a person will eat because they can actually see with the red plate better. There are a lot of little things throughout the community that make a big difference. Wider hallways, brighter lighting, easy access to the outdoors, no thresholds, everything's level, things like that.
Before arriving a year and a half ago, Ruth lived in a traditional assisted living facility in Longmeadow, about 3 hours away. But she began having trouble caring for herself, and bringing in home health aides only confused her. She didn't need skilled nursing care because she's generally healthy, and Bob was relieved to find an assisted living facility near his home on Cape Cod that specializes in memory impairment.
All of us fear that we're going to put them into a place that, number one, they're going to hate, and number two, they're not going to be taken care of and they're going to be left alone. But that's why you really need to spend some time and go to these places.
One of the biggest obstacles families face is financial. Under current law, an individual's assets must be nearly depleted before the federal government will step in under Medicaid. The qualification criteria is complicated, and many loopholes that previously allowed people to give away assets in order to qualify have since been closed. The reality is that very few people can afford care costs for the duration of the disease. In 2009, the national average for a year at an assisted living facility specializing in dementia care was about $55,000. A nursing home was about $87,000. In Ruth Motorstock's case, Bob says she pays $250 a day which is based on the level of care she needs.
It's so complex. It's incredibly complex that most families have a real difficult time dealing with it, because the sources of funding, where you can get funds, what you can do, what you can't do, are very complicated and very difficult.
When it comes to sorting out all the finances, Bob has a leg up. He was a certified financial planner before he retired. Since then, he's taken an interest in long-term care issues, even writing a softcover book called Can We Talk? A Financial Guide for Baby Boomers Assisting Their Elderly Parents.
I learned for myself how difficult it is to tell your parents or parent what to do. It's a reversal of roles.
People who work with and advocate for Alzheimer's patients commonly recommend buying long-term care insurance, which pays for both institutional and home care. But premiums are expensive. Tom Grape is CEO of Benchmark Senior Living, which operates 44 senior living communities in New England. He says the industry is prepared to handle the growing number of Alzheimer's patients, a population expected to reach 140,000 people in Massachusetts alone in the next 15 years. But cost will continue to be an issue for most families.
Personally, I think long-term care insurance is a great solution for the whole longer-term issue of funding elder care, but it's just simply not widely held. It's growing, but I think we have 4% or perhaps 5% of our residents are paid for through long-term care insurance.
The most recent census numbers show that about 54,000 residents of Cape Cod are age 65 or over, which translates into an estimated 9,000 people living with Alzheimer's here. There's about 120,000 statewide. Bob Modestock says he didn't expect that his mother would be one of them, but he didn't leave it to chance. 10 years ago, when she was still clear-headed, he sat down with his mom to talk about her final wishes. He says it may have been the most important conversation they ever had. For WCAI, I'm Sean Corcoran in Centerville. Looking at paintings in a museum or singing songs around a piano is not going to stop Alzheimer's, as it steals away memories and personality. But around the country, art and music therapy programs are becoming more common for people with memory impairment. These sessions are not about curing the disease. They're about human interaction.
Now, do you know what show that was from?
Brianna LePage is a Berklee College of Music graduate and a trained music therapist who specializes in people with dementia.
That's it? The sound of music? The sound of music.
This is the Arts and Alzheimer's and Music Program, which Alzheimer's Services of Cape Cod and the Islands runs at different locations across the region, including here at the Provincetown Art Association Museum. This morning, LePage holds up a poster of Julie Andrews and the Von Trapp family and encourages a half dozen people with memory impairment and their caregivers to recall the plot and songs of The Sound of Music.
So long, farewell, I'll be saying adieu.
LePage uses song to stimulate Alzheimer's patients' long-term memory, while discussions about old films like The Wizard of Oz spark conversation. On the best days, the person with Alzheimer's becomes a bit more comfortable, relaxed, and in the moment.
You see people come into the group sometimes, and they have like this look on their face, like, oh my God, what are they making me do this time? And then we start singing, and they all of a sudden start smiling, and it's just the whole attitude changes.
For caregivers, seeing a lost smile again or hearing a singing voice that's gone missing can be a joyous moment. Molly Perdue was a caregiver to her mother before she died, and Perdue began working for Alzheimer's Services. Perdue experienced one of those moments when her mother one day started singing When the Saints Go Marching In.
I thought that was just phenomenal, that she could break out in a full song and know the words, yet have difficulty putting two sentences together.
Despite their apparent benefit, these art and music sessions are not well attended. In fact, the people who run the region's Alzheimer's support groups and adult daycare programs know they are interacting with just a fraction of the estimated 9,000 families on Cape Cod who are dealing with a loved one with the disease.
When families hide this and they don't want to talk to their neighbors about it and they isolate, it contributes to some of the difficulty of providing the care. And it also allows the person with the disease to become isolated, which is probably the worst thing that a person can do with memory loss.
71-year-old Truro resident Joe Ataro was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 4 years ago. It's in the early stages. He can still drive and stay at home alone, but the disease has affected his speech. He attends as many art and music sessions as he can.
Well, it makes life it fills things up, you know. Your the area around you is gives you a filling situation. I can't quite put, you know.
Joe spent 31 years with the Truro Volunteer Fire Department. He also was chairman of the Town Conservation Commission for a time, which is where he met his wife, Maxine, the commission secretary. They've been married for 13 years.
When he was first diagnosed with it, at first, he kind of like thought maybe we didn't want to tell people, but he's at the point now where he feels comfortable with me telling people. And I think the more people that know it, the more accepting they are to it. That way they're not looking at him like, what's wrong with him? Why isn't he, saying what he wants to say?
Joe has asked Maxine to finish his sentences for him when she knows what he's trying to say.
His biggest fear is he worries about me if in fact he does reach that point that he will need help. He tells me all the time, he says, when I ever get to that point, put me in a home. And I keep telling him, no, I will make sure that you stay home with me and I take care of you. Because it's just what people do.
Taking care of a loved one at home is something thousands of Cape Codders are doing, but it can present problems as the disease progresses and the caregiver is left on 24-hour duty with little or no support. Liz Smith is the director of the Orleans Council on Aging, which hosts a robust adult daycare program for people with memory impairment. The program lets caregivers leave their loved ones for nearly 6 hours each day in a safe environment where there's exercise and music classes and lots of people who are trained in how to best interact with people with Alzheimer's. But despite the benefits, Smith says caregivers often are reluctant to participate.
Unfortunately, there's a shame that seems to go with the disease. It's almost as though one caused it. There is a tendency of shame so that they hide their loved one, keep them home.
Per capita, Orleans is the oldest town in the state, with an estimated 400 people living with Alzheimer's. But the adult day program has only about 30 seniors enrolled, and they come from several communities, not just Orleans. Smith is hopeful that a new weekend program, which is only 4 hours long, will help ease people into the idea that it's okay to leave loved ones in the hands of others who know Alzheimer's disease and what it can do. But before patients and caregivers can benefit, families must get past their anxiety and shame that prevents them from seeking help. For WCAI, I'm Sean Corcoran in Orleans. Orleans Police Officer Kerry O'Connell holds above her head what looks like a small TV antenna, which at one time were common on the tops of houses. For demonstration purposes, she uses the antenna to locate someone hidden nearby who is carrying a small transmitter about the size of a watch. It's the type of radio system biologists use to track wildlife. The clicks become louder the closer O'Connell gets to the transmitter. The signal can pass through concrete, steel, and water, and the entire rig is designed to locate people who've gone missing, typically people with Alzheimer's and related dementia, or even autism, who have a tendency to wander from their homes.
Every patient or every client gets a transmitter with a specific number on it, and we're able to dial it into our locator, and we can hone in on that when we get close to the client, when they go missing.
Yesterday, 17 officers with the Barnstable County Sheriff's Department learned how to use equipment just like O'Connell's. Boston went live with the same system this past February. It's part of a program underway across the country by LoJack, a company usually associated with finding stolen vehicles. Now LoJack is involved in finding lost people. They call it Project Safety Net. Sheriff James Cummings says LoJack is providing the training and 10 receivers at no charge, which he will strategically distribute in cruisers across Cape Cod.
We do have an older population. We're a retirement community. Folks come down here to enjoy their retirement, and unfortunately, along with age comes these problems for some folks, and puts us in a good position to be ahead of the curve a little bit and have this equipment ready, and should it be needed, and again, serve the public as well.
Four communities on Cape Cod already have this technology. People who want a transmitter, watch, or anklet can pay LoJack a $99 fee and then $30 a month for the peace of mind. Elisa Galazzi of Alzheimer's Services of the Cape and Islands says efforts like this one are essential as growing numbers of Cape Cod's population need assistance staying in their homes.
Every for-profit business should be looking at this population specifically and thinking, how can we tweak our services? How can we connect with them? How can we intersect to keep them safe, to keep them successful, and to keep them in the community?
One quarter of the 225,000 year-round residents on Cape Cod are age 65 or over. That's double the national average. About 1 in 8 people in that population are estimated to have Alzheimer's, and the statistics are only expected to grow more dire. Dr. Michael Markowski is one of only six neurologists on the Cape. He says the FDA has approved two classes of drugs for treatment, but they only slow the progress of the disease by a few months, if at all.
Once they're maximized on these two medications, I'll see them back when there are significant behavioral difficulties or any new neurological symptoms, but there's nothing else I'm offering patients to improve their quality of life at that point.
With little comfort available in the form of pharmaceuticals, Emerald Physicians has a team of a half dozen patient advocates who check in with caregivers and assist any way they can. Those informal, unpaid caregivers represent tremendous savings for government, as much as $4.3 billion in annual care in Massachusetts alone. And the numbers will continue to grow. Molly Perdue of Alzheimer's Services says that every day in the United States, between 7,000 and 10,000 baby boomers turn 65 years old. And that will continue for about the next 20 years.
You would think that, of course, we need to do everything that we can to keep these informal caregivers doing, you know, what they're doing, because it's such an important service.
There is growing awareness among policymakers that home caregivers need to be supported, if for no other reason than the country's Medicaid system cannot handle the growing costs. Through a series of state grants, Galazi says efforts are underway to create support systems modeled after programs already in existence for families with members who have disabilities.
We should be looking at how to keep people safe and successful in the community, and what does that mean? And they've done a great job on the disability side. And I think that we should be applying all of those great strategies to the aging side of the equation.
The importance of long-term care insurance also is part of the mix. Right now, less than 10% of Americans have insurance to cover them if they need long-term care. Part of President Obama's health care plan includes the creation in the next year of a long-term care insurance plan through the federal government. It's expected to include automatic deductions from workers' paychecks, similar to the way Social Security works. But even with such insurance, Galazi says the importance of creating a regional network to support informal caregivers is only increasing, and Cape Cod is at the front of the line.
We really need to come together as a community, from the hospital to the different leaders in the towns, and create a whole plan, a community plan, of how we can be the example for the country, because we are a microcosm of where the rest of the country is going to be in the next 15 years.
The Massachusetts Executive Office of Elder Affairs is putting together a state plan to deal with the growing numbers of people with Alzheimer's and to help increase access to support services so patients can stay in their community as long as practical, even if they don't have caregiver support. Just where the effort will go and what final legislation will look like is unclear. What is clear is that Cape Cod, and Massachusetts as a whole, needs a robust chronic care network to support people now and in the future living with Alzheimer's disease. For WCAI, I'm Sean Corcoran.